We have a three slide projectors today. This is Marshall Wyatt. He's a native of North Carolina and a background in the visual arts with degrees in the San Francisco Art Institute. He's long been a record collector with special interests in Southern vernacular music of the pre-war era. He's best known for his field work and research on string band music from North Carolina mountains of Ashe County. He's produced two CD anthologies, Music from the Lost Provinces and Violin Sing the Blues for Me. He's a regular contributor to the Old Time Herald and is currently a director of the North Carolina Folklore Institute. Marshall.
We can, yeah, click the lights out. In the year 1752, a group of six explorers left Pennsylvania and traveled southward until they reached the uncharted mountains of Western Carolina. Their leader was a Moravian bishop named Augustus Spangenberg, and his mission was to find land for a new Moravian settlement. The bishop kept a diary, and on December 2nd, he made this entry. "We have reached here after a hard journey over very high, terrible mountains and cliffs. Part of the way we climbed on hands and knees, dragging after us the loads we had taken from the backs of horses. For had we not unsaddled them, they would have fallen backward down the mountain. Indeed, this did happen once. Part of the way we led the horses, which were trembling like a leaf. When we reached the top, we saw mountains to the right, to the left, before and behind us, rising like great waves in a storm." In the year 1913, Avery Blevins, his wife Sibby, and their eight children journeyed through these same mountains in two horse-drawn wagons containing the sum of their earthly belongings, including one time-worn fiddle. The youngest child, Walter Franklin Blevins, was 2 years old, and his crib was an old steamer trunk. The family settled along Little Horse Creek in the northwestern portion of Ashe County, North Carolina, in a region often called the Lost Provinces, cut off from the rest of the state by the sheer wall of the Blue Ridge Mountains. From here, the Atlantic Ocean seemed no more accessible than the Pacific. In those days, Ashe County had no paved roads, no electricity, no motorized vehicles, and virtually no industry. But it did have music. When Avery Blevins was not playing his old violin, it would hang on a wooden peg beyond the reach of his children, or so he thought. On the sly, young Frank would push a chair against the wall, stand in it, and take down the fiddle. By the age of 6, he was proficient on the instrument, and by 12, he was so good that his father relented and gave him the violin. Frank learned the old mountain tunes of his father, but soon he found new sources of material. By the mid-1920s, phonograph records had arrived in Ashe County, and radio was not far behind. The town of Jefferson had been wired for electricity, and automobiles were seen in the streets. On Monday morning, November 7th, 1927, three young musicians huddled beneath the awning of Phillips Dry Goods Store in West Jefferson, careful to keep their instrument cases out of the pouring rain. Soon a Buick sedan pulled up and the musicians climbed in. Frank Blevins carried his old fiddle, his brother Ed had a brand new Martin guitar, and their friend Fred Miller brought along a tenor banjo. The car and driver had been hired by the Columbia Phonograph Company, and the destination was Atlanta, Georgia. The following day, after 400 miles of rough two-lane roads, the Buick pulled up in front of a warehouse on Peachtree Street, where the record company had installed a makeshift studio. Primed with some good Georgia moonshine, the trio performed 6 songs while seated around a single microphone. Frank's foot-stomping performance ruined the first wax master, and thereafter he beat rhythm on a thick cushion kept in the studio for just that purpose. Later, the boys posed for photographs, and by supper time, they were back on the road. The first Columbia release by Frank Blevins and his Tar Heel Rattlers appeared in stores 2 months later. Frank was still just 16 years old. In 1929, Frank and Ed found jobs at the Lincoln Furniture Company in Marion, Virginia, a move of just 40 miles, but one that opened a window onto new possibilities. The town of Marion had what Ashe County did not: industry, wealth, and high culture. Here, the Lincoln brothers, John and Charles, operated Virginia's largest furniture plant, owned the town's hotel and theater, and entertained movie stars at their palatial estate. John Lincoln's wife served as president of the Monday Afternoon Music Club, a group of well-to-do women who met each week to perform and discuss music. Among them was Annabel Morris Buchanan, a writer, composer, and self-styled folklorist. Mrs. Buchanan encountered Frank Blevins soon after he moved to Marion, and she set about to transcribe his repertoire of old-time fiddle tunes, careful to steer him away from music that lacked a suitable pedigree. Mrs. Buchanan's mentor was John Powell, a celebrated concert pianist and composer from Richmond, who was known to incorporate folk melodies into his music. In the spring of 1930, Powell accepted an invitation to visit the Lincoln Estate in Marion and speak to the Monday Afternoon Music Club. For weeks preceding his arrival, club members fretted in nervous anticipation. No one would volunteer to entertain their distinguished guest with a musical performance. When John Powell arrived in Marion, there was still no musical program planned. Finally, in exasperation, John Lincoln declared, "I'll just bring my fiddler from the factory." Frank Blevins was there in a matter of minutes, along with brother Ed. Undaunted by Powell's presence, Frank cut loose with "Molly Put the Kettle On," followed by "Mississippi Sawyer." John Powell was delighted. He sat down at the piano, rolled up his shirt sleeves, and traded tunes with Frank for the better part of an hour. Afterward, he delivered a stirring speech on the importance of preserving the old folk melodies. The meeting was a success. The following year, Annabel Morris Buchanan organized a folk festival on Whitetop Mountain in Grayson County, Virginia, just a few miles south of Marion. In August of 1931, musicians from three states arrived to compete for prizes. Frank Blevins won top honors in the fiddle competition, beating out a field of eight other fiddlers, including his own father. He was awarded a blue ribbon and a $10 gold piece, a considerable sum in 1931. Mrs. Buchanan had hoped for a turnout of several hundred spectators on the mountain. Nearly 3,000 showed up. The festival was such a success that it became an annual event for nearly a decade. In 1933, the festival lasted 2 days with prizes offered in six categories. More than two dozen fiddlers registered to compete. Excitement grew when Eleanor Roosevelt, whose interest in folk music was well known, made plans to attend the festival. Annabel Buchanan promised the First Lady a lovely afternoon of folk music and a magnificent panoramic view into five states. Frank Blevins later gave a less romantic description of conditions on the mountain: overcrowding, inadequate water supplies, unsanitary latrines, and drunken revelry late into the night. On August 12th, however, musicians were on their best behavior when the First Lady arrived on the mountain. Once again, Frank won the title of Best Fiddler, and his trio won top honors in the band category. Mrs. Roosevelt presented the ribbons and posed for photographs with Frank's band as they played the Roosevelt campaign song, "Happy Days Are Here Again." In spite of his successes, Frank Blevins never again competed at Whitetop. He felt confined by the strict rules and fixed ideas that characterized the festival. He was ready to move on. To signal this change, Frank expanded his string band and gave it a new name, the Southern Buccaneers. An indication of his ambitions and his nerve is contained in a letter addressed to Eleanor Roosevelt, dated November 9, 1934. Dear Mrs. Roosevelt, doubtless you will be surprised at my writing you for this favor. I am a member of the Hillbilly Band that played for you on the White Top Mountain, 1933. I am the boy who played the fiddle, the one to whom you awarded a prize. I have since that time counted that a day to which honor came to me. Our band wants to get in with the Fox Theater or land some other place to play, and we were thinking that if we could get you to make a statement of the class of our music and our ability to play, it would have a great bearing, and I am sure it will put us on to the job. If you will be kind enough to write us a recommendation and send to me, I shall greatly appreciate the kindness. And if you ever want any playing done at the White House, all you will have to do is just drop us a line. With kindest personal regards for you and the President, I am yours very truly, Frank Blevins. Mrs. Roosevelt's reply, dated November 22nd, was concise. My dear Mr. Blevins, it is never possible for me to make any recommendations or endorsements for use such as you request. All I can say is that I enjoy your playing very much. Very sincerely yours, Eleanor Roosevelt. Frank's band, the Southern Buccaneers, became popular throughout Southwest Virginia, even without Mrs. Roosevelt's endorsement. In the age of records, radio, and motion pictures, people expected to be entertained, and a simple rustic string band was no longer enough. During the hard years of the Great Depression, new diversions were required, and the Southern Buccaneers delivered. Like other bands of the era, they offered a high-energy traveling variety show, often performing on local radio stations in order to publicize their next engagement. Their standard dress uniform was a pair of bib overalls, a blue work shirt, and a red kerchief, all part of a conscious effort to promote a hillbilly image. A typical show might open with Devil's Dream, followed by Beer Barrel Polka, then a version of Nine Pound Hammer rendered in three-part harmony. There was a comedy segment complete with rube costumes and a one-man band contraption. For a while, the band featured a female vocalist billed as the Blue Ridge Queen, who would tap dance and sing the latest radio hits. There would be hot instrumentals, ballads, harmony vocals, Hawaiian guitars, yodeling, stunt fiddling, and clog dancing. The show's finale included Lonesome Road Blues, followed by Old Joe Clark. There was something for everybody. When the United States entered World War II, Lincoln Furniture converted to wartime production, building parts for fighter planes. Working overtime as foreman, Frank Blevins found less time for music. Then, on August 2, 1944, Ed Blevins was diagnosed with meningitis, and 9 days later he died at age 34. Frank had lost his beloved brother, his best friend, and his musical partner. He would never play music professionally again. Frank Blevins never achieved lasting fame. He never wielded great influence, and his recorded legacy is extremely slim. Yet in many ways, his career mirrors the evolution of rural music in the American South during the first half of the 20th century. His earliest years were steeped in the folk tradition. In his teenage years, Frank absorbed the impact of new technologies. In his 20s, he mingled with intellectuals and folklorists, then moved on to more popular pursuits, embracing the role of entertainer. He was equally at ease tossing down moonshine with his neighbors or drinking coffee with the governor, sawing his fiddle at the Buffalo Tavern, or serenading the First Lady on White Top Mountain. In the 1940s, Frank Blevins settled down with his wife Henrietta, their twin boys, and his day job at the furniture factory. After the war and throughout the 1950s and 60s, he continued to play his fiddle with friends and family, and made a series of home recordings. In a sense, his music had come full circle. In the 1970s, his hearing began to fail. Even so, he could still amaze his grandchildren with Flight of the Bumblebee. But his hearing only grew worse, so Frank finally retired the old fiddle to its case, along with three blue ribbons from White Top, a handbill for the Southern Buccaneers, and a letter from Mrs. Roosevelt. Now in his 90th year, Frank Blevins is nearly deaf and rendered mute by a series of minor strokes. His health is fragile, but he draws strength from his devoted wife and family. He remains cheerful and alert. His personality is intact, and there's still music in his heart. And what I would like to do now is play two songs that Frank and his band recorded in 1927 and 28. The first one is called Don't Get Trouble in Your Mind, and the second is called I've Got No Honey Babe Now. Frank fiddles and sings. His brother Ed plays guitar, and Fred Miller banjo. Hopefully this equipment will work.
Thank you. anybody.